Today's shiur is Masechta Bava Kama Daf Mem Zayin, and we will begin on Daf Mem Vav Amud Beis, two lines from the wide lines. The Mishnah discussed the situation of a kempara shenachas a shor. If a cow killed a shor, and the cow was pregnant, but we're not quite sure when the baby was born. Was the baby born prior to the negicha? And therefore it participated in the negicha, and it should participate in paying for the negicha, or did it get born, was it born prior to the negicha and doesn't have to participate in paying, or was it born after the negicha, and then it would, did participate and would have to pay. So the Mishnah said, what we do under those circumstances is, Mishalim, Chatzi nezek min ha-parah, v'nevi nezek min ha-vlad. So the Gemara understands, Chatzi nezek, v'revi nezek. The Mishnah understands that the mother, we're talking about a tam, we take Chatzi nezek from. The child, since we're not sure did it or did not participate in the hezek, so if it did participate, we would take Chatzi nezek. Since we have a suffix if it participated, we only take a quarter. So we take a chatzi nezik from the mother and a revi nezik from the child, which equals three quarters of the nezik. And therefore, ask the Gemara, palgam niska hu debay shlumei. When damage is done by a tam, you only have to pay chatzi nezik. Kuli niska necha reviya. But here, the way we explained it, they would be paying three quarters nezik. Kula neska nechi reva mayavidite. Where do we find in halacha that you pay three quarters nezik? Amar Abaya, so explains Abaya, that's not the way to understand the Mishnah. Rather, the way to understand the Mishnah is chatzi nezik means echa mi'ab benezik. When the Mishnah says that you take chatzi nezik from the mother, it doesn't mean you take half the nezik, you only take a quarter. Why? Because as we've been saying, we don't know if the mother did this nezik by herself, or did the mother have the child as a partner. And if the mother had the child as a partner, it doesn't have to pay half nezik, it only has to pay quarter nezik. The other quarter nezik has to be paid by the child. So therefore, regarding the mother, we take echad mi'ab benezik. That's what the Mishnah means, we take a half nezik. That means we take half of what we would normally take if it did it by itself, which equals a quarter of the nezik. And then, when we talk about the child is as follows. If the child participated in this act, it would have to take a quarter of the nezik. If the child did not participate, doesn't have to pay anything. So it's a suffix. So instead of taking a quarter of a nezik from the child, we take an eighth. Revi nezik, when the Mishnah talks about taking revi nezik from the child, it means ech mishmai benezik. So what we will do is take a quarter nezik from the mother, an eighth nezik from the child, which actually equals 3/8 of a nezik. Taisus asks obvious question. Taisus says that we're assuming, doing the mathematical computation here, that the child and the mother are equal partners. And if, for example, we knew for sure that the mother was indeed pregnant when she did this nezik, a quarter of a nezik is paid by the mother, and a quarter of the nezik is paid by the child. Ask Tosfos, how can we treat the mother and the child as equals? The mother is this big animal. The child is a fetus in her womb. How do they treat it as equals? So Taisa says, of course, the Gemara does not mean to get into that kind of a detail. But of course, Taisa, the halacha would be that we have to make that cheshbin. And we have to figure out what percentage is the child of this large animal, and what percentage is the mother, and do this formulation based on that proportion. That's Taisa's teretz. Then Taisa and the Rishonim quote Yerushalmi. The Rishalmi says that since we're dealing with a mu'ud, it doesn't make a difference who's bigger and who's smaller, the mother and the child are partners, and they each have to pay half. And I saw that Rav Chaim Brisker explains the Yerushalmi as follows. We've been discussing, we've said this halacha numerous times, Baruch Hashem, that the difference between a tam and a mud is a tam pays chatzi nezik and a mud pays nezik shalom. But there's also a very fundamental difference how that money is collected. A tam pays migufay from the animal itself. Mud we pay from the aliyah. Says Reb Chaim Brisker, that doesn't just represent how it's paid, from where you could collect the payment. It represents a lot more. He says what it represents is what kind of obligation exists here. And when a tam does damage, the responsibility lays on the animal. And therefore here, if it were a tam, and the mother and the child both participated in doing the hezek, and they're both tams, so they both have to pay, they're responsible. Of course, it comes out of the owner's pocket because he owns the animal. By a mu'ud, it's the responsibility of the owner. It goes back to a concept we've discussed many times. It's the owner's fault that he didn't properly watch his animal that is a mu'ud. So it makes no difference if one is a tam and one is a big animal and one's a little animal. It really all revolves around the owner. And the owner didn't do his job, and therefore you could collect equally from the mother and the child. Ask the Gemara, says the Gemara further, in explaining how Abaye views the case of our Mishnah. Says the Gemara, the par of Vlad Chadnenu, if the mother and the child, this entire pregnant animal, is owned by one individual, and the Nizik, and that's the Mazik, he owns this animal, and the Nizik approaches him, says the Gemara, Hachanami the Matzi Amalei Lebal Para, the Nizik could tell this individual, you have to pay me chatzi nezik. Your animal did damage. I don't want to know about the mother. I don't want to know about the child. You owe me chatzi nezik. Eloloi tzricha. What is the case that we're referring to? The par of the chad, vlad the chad. The mother and the fetus are not owned by the same. And as the Rishonim explained, it's impossible to sell the fetus itself because selling the fetus is a dovish labaloilam. So what the Gemara means, says the Rishonim, is that he sold the mother, which is obviously a sellable item, it's existing, and he keeps the fetus for himself. And two different individuals own this. And what happened here was, says the Gemara, either Kadam Tavil Balpara, if the Nizik was smart enough to go to the Palpara, Tchila first, he says to Hachanami Damalela Balpara, Para didach azikten, your Para did damage to me. That's for sure. And the Vlad is not my consideration. You're claiming that the Vlad participated, and it's certainly relevant given that you don't own the Vlad anymore. Havli raya, this l'chshutfi. You have to bring a raya that your Vlad participated. And as the Ravid explains, it's sort of the concept that we discussed yesterday. This is a situation of a bari v'shema. The mother certainly did hezek. The child, we're not sure. So he says, Bari Vishema, the Nizik tells the Mazik, it's for sure that your animal participated, and since your animal participated, you're chayv. Ella, what happened here? The Kodim Tavila Balvatchila. What happened was that the Nizik didn't come to the shear. And because he didn't come to the shear, he went to the owner of the Vlad. And as the Ramban and the Rajb explained the Gemara, he goes to that individual, and says that the Vlad participated in the hezek, and that the Vlad should have to participate in the payment. Not, says the Ramban, that he's saying, I know this for sure, but the fact that he did approach the owner of the Vlad puts him into a situation that the halacha views him as admitting that the Vlad participated here. So now, the Baal Para tells him, Amalei, Gelisa Adatech, the Shutfa Isli. You have shown that you believe, says the owner of the Para to the Nizik, that the Baal Vlad is a partner here. And therefore, I don't have to pay the whole Chatzin Nizik. But according to this version, if he was smart enough to go to the Baal Para first, the Baal Para would have to pay the whole Chatzin Nizik. Ikadamri, And we're going to explain the Gemara the way the Baal HaMor explains the Gemara. Afgav the Kodim Tavil about Perot Chila Matzah Matchile. Says the Baal HaMor. Whether we follow the first version of Abaya, or you follow the Ikra, the Amri version of Abaya, the Mishnah is referring to a situation where the Nizik, where the Para was, where the Vlad and the Para are not owned by the same individual, and the Nizik approached the Baal Vlad first. And therefore the Baal Para could say, you indicated here that you believe that the Vlad participated. The nafkamina between the first Lashon and the second Lashon is if he went to the Baal Para first. According to the first Lashon, as we just learned, if he went to the Baal Para first, the Baal Para would have to pay the Chatzi Nezik. According to the Ikad the Amri, even if he approaches the Baal Para first, the Baal Para still has a valid claim. Because he could say, Motzi Matchele, the Baal Para could tell the Nizik, Nei the Yudea, not the Shutf Isli. There was a Shutf here. And just because you approached me, and just because you're saying that my animal did this by itself, that doesn't make that right. And you're approaching me myself, I should not be responsible. And therefore, as we learned earlier, Abaye says the Baal Para would only have to pay, under all circumstances, only a Revi and Nezik, a quarter of the Nezik. Amar Rava, says Rava to Abaye, you're explaining that our Mishnah means that the Baal Para pays a quarter, and the Baal Vlad pays an eighth. Asks Rava to Abaye, Ota echem mi arba menezik, vechem mi shmari menezik tani. Is that what our Mishnah says? Does our Mishnah say that the Baal Par pays a quarter and the Baal Vlad pays an eighth? Chatzi nezik, revi nezik tani. Our Mishnah says the Baal Par pays a half and the Baal Vlad pays a quarter. How could you change what the Mishnah says? El Amar Rava says, Rava, we have to understand the Mishnah differently. La'olam b'par v'vlad d'chad. The Mishnah is referring to a situation where both the Par and the Vlad are owned by one individual. V'achi kamrinan. And the way to understand the Mishnah is as follows. Is la para, if the para is in existence, mishtam chatzi nezik la para, and the nizik is collecting his damages from the para, he's entitled to chatzi nezik. The para certainly participated here, and we have to pay chatzi nezik. Less lama para, but let's say the para no longer is here, and we're dealing with a tam, as I said earlier, and a tam only pays me gufoy. So you can't collect from the para, there is no para. Who are you going to collect from? The Vlad. Not as a machloikis. Did the Vlad participate? Or did Vlad not participate? Was the Vlad born before the Hezek or after the Hezek? Mishtalm Ravi Nezek Mavlad. We only can take Ravi Nezek from the Vlad. Why? Because it's a Sophic. And Mom and Amutable Sophic. Chalkim. Says the Gemara, what do we see from here? Tam de lo yedinin. What is the entire basis for this entire discussion that we started in the Mishnah and continued in learning today's shir? Because lo yedinin, I have a vlad behadok kinocha, I lo have. We're not quite certain. Was the child born already, or the child was not born? Aval, what would be the halacha? Says the Gemara, I pshit lo to have a vlad behadok kinocha. If we know for sure that the child had not yet been born when the Maisa Hezek occurred. The Mishtam Kul Nezik Vlad. Then we could even collect the entire Chatzi Nezik from the Vlad. Why? Says the Gemara. Because Rava Tamei, Dama Rava, Parush Hezika, if a cow does Hezik, and it's a pregnant cow when it does the Hezik, Goyva Mivlada. We could collect the damages even from the Vlad. My Tama, Gufahi. The Vlad is considered part of the mother. And the way most Rishonim explain the Gemara, it refers back to a concept that we encounter many times, Ubi Yerech Imai. The fetus is considered part of the mother. Others say that it's not really, other Rishonim say it's not really connected. We could say Ubi Lav Yerech Imai. It's not part of the mother, but it was certainly in the mother's womb when this Maisa Hezek happened and therefore participated. Although, I did see a very interesting question from Kivega. He says, if we're going to follow, not specifically to this case, obviously, but if we're going to follow the concept of Uba Lav Yerech Imoy, and a fetus is considered an independent entity from its mother, how would it ever be mutter, asks Rabbi Kivega, for one to have relations with his pregnant wife? his pregnant wife is carrying his daughter. And his daughter, you're not allowed to have, obviously, relations with your daughter. So when you're having relations with your wife when she's pregnant, you're also at the same time having relations with your daughter. Says Rabbi Akiva, it's not considered a ma'aseh bia in the daughter. And since it's not considered a ma'aseh bia with the daughter, even if you hold ubalav yerachima, it's not a problem. Continues Rava to say, even if you hold ubalav yerachima, you could still have relations because it's not considered a ma'aseh bia with the uber. Says the Gemara, however, says Rava, even though we're saying that a child in its mother's womb by a cow is considered part of the mother, Tanagolish is and a government bait sasa. The egg in a chicken is not considered part of the chicken. My tama, pirsha ba'almahu. And there's two ways the Rishonim explain pirsha ba'almahu. One way they explain it is the word pirsha means separate. The egg is considered separate. And some Rishonim go on to say it's not always separate. At a certain point it becomes separate, but we don't know exactly what that point is, so it always has to be considered a separate entity. Another pshat, the word pirsha means perish. Perish means waste. An egg is not considered part of the animal, the chicken, it's really considered a waste material. But now, goes on to the Gemara, let's say somebody caused a pregnant cow, we spoke about this in the Mishnah yesterday, to miscarry. And the fetus dies. And we have to pay for it. The question is, how do we evaluate, how do we assess that damage? Amarova, ain't shom lepar b'fnei atzma, ulev lad b'fnei atzma. When we make the assessment, we don't take an assessment. This is what the mother is worth. This is what the child is worth. Because if we're going to make the assessment that way, it'll come out very expensive to the mazik. El shom levlad agav b'parah. The way we make the assessment is, we make an evaluation, what would it cost for, what is the value of a pregnant cow, versus the value of a non-pregnant cow. It's not that significant. Similarly, mekain atamoitza, she yatoy mekain, says the Gemara, for if you're not going to do the evaluation that way, nimtza atamakash samazik, it'll be very detrimental to the mazik. Similarly, says the Gemara, mekain atamoitza bekotei yad avdei shel chaveri. If somebody, rachman shlan, cuts off the hand of an eved of someone else's. So when you make the evaluation, you don't make the evaluation, how much would you agree, how much would the owner of this Eved agree to pay, or to be paid, to have an Eved hand removed? It's a very expensive proposition. To agree to have an Eved's hand removed? Rather, the way we make the evaluation, we say this Eved with a hand is worth this much, this Eved without both hands is worth this much, and that differential is what has to be paid. Ask the Brisk Rav, why when the Gemara wants to give us this example of doing this evaluation about removing Rachman Slan someone's hand, do we talk about Yad Avdoi Shel Chaveri? Why don't we talk about if somebody was Mazik, someone else, and he cut off his hand, you have to pay Nezik, you have to pay the value of the hand. Why don't we have to talk about Avdoi Shel Chaveri? Says the Brisk Rav, the Gemara is teaching us a very big Chiddush. The Gemara is teaching us a Chiddush that it's not only in a situation of chavola. If somebody is mazik someone else, if Reuven is mazik Shimon, so he has to pay for the chavola. But when somebody is mazik the eved of someone else, it's not just the issue of chavola. It's an issue that I caused the loss. So maybe since Reuven caused Shimon a loss, it's a financial issue. We should look at it differently. Teaches us the Gemara that in both situations, says the Brisk Rav, whether Reuven is mazik Shimon, whether Reuven is Mazik, even Shimon's Eved, the din would be the same. But then I saw that the Chazon Yecheskel, of Cheskel Abramsky, tries to understand this Gemara a little deeper. What does the Gemara mean, asks of Cheskel Abramsky. Is the Gemara teaching us that this is the formula, that wherever the Torah tells us that an assessment has to be made, what was the value of the damage, this is the formula to be taken? That's one approach. Or is it strictly a din by Nezek, Chavola, that this is the way the evaluation is done? But not everywhere. What would be the Nafkamina? By Gzela. How do we make the evaluation of Gzela? Do we make it the same way or not? And says Rav Chaskel Abramsky in the Chazon Yecheskel, that this, what the Gemara here means to say, that the Gemara is establishing, this is the way the Torah wants us to make evaluations, based, not just looking at the thing independently, but looking at a part of a big picture. Says the Gemara, we can't have the moitze, but mazik sada shel chaveri. If somebody does damage to someone else's field, that means he uproots a row in the field. Again, the question is, how do we look at it? Do we look at it that I would come over to you and ask you, how much is it worth it to you, that how much would it be cost for me to uproot this field, row, this row in the field? It would be a very expensive proposition. Or do we say, we have a field with all the rows full of vegetable, or we have a field with missing a row. And the difference is how much the mazik has to pay, a much smaller number. Furthermore, Rashi says, you have to look at the size of the field, because the bigger the field, one row makes less of a difference. So the halacha is you look at a field that's a base saw, which is 50 by 50 amma. One row in such a large field is not really that significant. Amalei Rav Acha b'Rei d'Rav Rav Ashi v'dinahu lachish mazik. Ask the Gemara if that's the din, so then we're being too nice, ask the Gemara to the mazik. And that if somebody caused a vlad of a parah to miscarry, and you have to pay for the vladis, looking at it in the way the Gemara described is being too kind to the mazik. So the Rishonim asked, why specifically in this case did the Gemara choose to ask the question? In all the cases that the Gemara just described, we've been very fair to the mazik, and it didn't bother the Gemara. Why did the Gemara all of a sudden get bothered here? So Rishonim say very nice terrors. A hand of an Eved is part of the Eved. So to evaluate the hand as part of the entire Eved is understandable. To evaluate a row of vegetables as part of the entire field is also understandable. It's part of the field. But on the other hand, to look at the Vlad and the Para as one entity, they're not one entity. There's a Para and a Vlad. And why are we viewing them together? Answers the Gemara, Mishim the Amalei, because the Mazik tells the Nizik, Para Avarta is Kizcha. When I did the damage, it was a pregnant para, and therefore when we evaluate the damage, we have to look at it that way. Para mev'arta shemin alach, we're going to look at it, evaluate it that way. Continues the Gemara in discussing how the evaluation of a pregnant para is done. Pshita, para of dechad v'lad dechad. In a situation as we described earlier, where one individual owns the cow, and another individual owns the fetus. Pitmal about para. We know that a pregnant animal, pregnant human is the same, is heavier. An animal, the heavier it is, the more valuable it is. Who gets the benefit of that value? Says the Gemara, that benefit is to the owner of the para. Nafchmai. It also takes up more space because it's pregnant. Now here, the fetus is a direct cause for that expansion, because it's in the animal. And there's more leather now. There's more hide. Who gets that? Rapap amal ba'para. It's still part of the mother. And therefore the ba'para gets that value. Rav Achmrei, Rav Ikam of Cholkin. It should be divided between the ba'para and the ba'vlad. And that is indeed the din. Hilchsa Cholkin. Says the Mishnah. Hakad ha'sheknas k'deroysav l'chotzer ba'abayis. Somebody who sells pats brings his pats into someone else's fields. Shleib Rishos. He's trespassing. He doesn't have Rishos. There's Machloikas Rishonim. What does Shleib Rishos mean? Most Rishonim means, Shleib Rishos means that he didn't get permission. Other Rishonim, the Rebbeinu Chananel explains, Shleib Rishos is that the Baal HaChatzer told him, I don't want you to bring it in here. And he did anyway. V'shaver behemtish Baal HaBayis. And the owner of the field's animal broke those pats. Potter. Because he says, why'd you bring your pats in here? Furthermore, if the animal tripped on those pats, Balakter is chayiv. The owner of the pats is chayiv. However, if the kado had rishus to bring in those pats, then Balakhotzer chayiv. And the Rishonim point out, and we'll discuss this more in a moment, that the Mishnah is referring to a kader, because the kader could say to the Balakhotzer, I did you a favor. You need pats. You need pats. So I brought you pats that if you could buy, that's not a valid excuse. If you don't have permission, you shouldn't be here. Another example. Hichnas peirois of l'chotzer b'alabais. Somebody brought his fruits into the owner's field. And again, it was Shalai Brishus. For Achlam Behemta Shabalabais, and the owner's animal ate up those fruits, Potter. Again, you had no right to bring it in. And here we find a very interesting Machlekes Achrayim. We discussed earlier in the Masechta the following situation. That let's say somebody left fruits in the Rishus HaRabim, and my animal went and ate those fruit. You can't have any claim to me. Because why are you leaving your fruits in the Rishus HaRabim? However, the Mishnah, the Gemara taught us earlier in the Masechta, that even though I don't have to pay for Hezek, I have to pay Mishalemis Mashanenis. I did benefit. I won't have to give my animal supper tonight. And the value of the supper I have to give you. The question is, what will be the din in this case? Does he have to pay the value of the supper? So many Achroinim, Baruch HaShulchan, and many Achroinim say, of course he has to pay the value of the supper. The person that brought the fruit, the person whose animal ate those fruits, doesn't have to give his animal supper tonight. Dar Sameach suggests that he doesn't even have to pay Mashanenis in this case. Because he says as follows. In the case where somebody left his fruits in the Rishus HaRabim, absolutely, he shouldn't have left them there. But he also didn't feed my animal. And therefore, since he didn't create the situation that my animal got fed, he didn't want that should happen. And therefore, I have to pay him at least the benefit I accrued. Here, by you bringing your animal into my field without permission, so you created a situation that your animal ate. I never wanted to feed your animal. I never wanted my animal to be fed from you. And therefore, you don't even have to pay much in Ennis, or Sumeach says. But what happens if the animal, my animal, trips on the peiris you put into the field? Again, Bal Peiris Chayiv. Why'd you put your food here? On the other hand, Vimhichnas Pershos, if you had permission to bring it in here, then the Bal Chatzur Chayiv, the Bal Chatzur is Chayiv. Another din. Similar din. Hichnas Shar L'Chatz Balabais. Somebody brought a shar into the Chatz of the Balabais. Again, Shalai Bishus, without permission. V'machas Shar Shabalabais. And then this animal that was brought in as a trespasser killed the shar of the owner. Or Shanoshka Kalav Shabalabais. Or was killed by the animal, Balabais' animal. Or was bitten by the Balabais' dog. He's potter. He shouldn't have brought it in here. If he, on the other hand, killed the owner's animal, chayiv. Machlokes Rishonim, what chayiv means. Some Rishonim say that the regular din of tam and mu'ud will be apply here, chatzi nezek and nezek shalim. Other Rishonim say you'll always have to pay nezek shalim, because it's b'shus ha-nezek. Why'd you bring it in here? So now, Tosfos asks the obvious question. The Mishnah says the exact same din three times. Why do we have to have the same din three times? So Tosfos says the way to understand the Mishnah is where Eloizu Afsu. Not only in the case of the pats, where if you bring in your pats into my rishus with my permission, so I should have known to be careful, because in those days particularly pats were made out of earthenware and they were very delicate. And if I wasn't careful, I'm obviously responsible. But what about if you bought your fruit? Fruit is not as easily ruined. And maybe I shouldn't be responsible. Teaches us the Mishnah that even by fruits I'm responsible. And then by a shor, which is very hard to damage, I'm still responsible. And then the Rishonim ask, why do we have to have both the case where my shor killed your animal or my dog killed your animal? Why do we have to have the shor and the dog? So I saw two pshatim in the Rishonim. One pshat in the Rishonim is that it's common for animals of the same type to have altercation. So if you brought your animal, your shor, into my field where I have a shor, you should have known that it's possible that your shor is going to get hurt. But that you should think that my dog is going to hurt your animal? Why would you think that? Still, if you did it, I'm potter. That's one pshat. Another pshat goes back to a Gemara we discussed in the previous year. The Gemara says, Ostla Adam Legadl, Kelev Robotok Pesai. A person not allowed to have a wild dog. So you could say, yes, I brought the shor into your field without permission. But that you have a dog that's that crazy, that bites, acts, you're not allowed to have such a dog. And therefore, even though I brought the shor shalai b'shus, you, the mazik, the owner, should be responsible. Should teach us the Mishnah, if you brought it in shalai b'shus, I'm not responsible. Continue the Mishnah. Nafal abayre, you brought your shor into my field, and it fell into my pit that had water in it. the hevish meima, when you ruin the pit, the water, chayiv. Hay avav b'nai l'taychay. The owner of the field's father or son were nebuch in this pit, and he kills the parent or the son by falling in there, the shalmas of kaifer, he has to pay kaifer. However, the mechnas pershus, if he had permission to bring in the animal, then a baal chotzer chayiv. Rabbi Omer makes Rabbi the following comment. The owner of the field is never chayiv unless he expressly undertakes to be a shomer. Says the Gemara, Tama d'shalay b'rishos. What does the Mishnah mean? That you brought your animal into my field without permission, so you're not a shomer. Habrishos, if you had permission, just because, says the Gemara, that you have permission to bring your item into my field, doesn't mean that when I gave you permission, I made you into a shus, into a shomer. Because loyam meaning kibuli kibela balkaderis niturus the behemta the balchotzer. That by me giving you permission to come in here, I made you into the shomer. Mani, whose opinion does this reflect? It reflects the opinion of Rebbe, damakalbastama, like kabbalah niturosai. That just because you have permission doesn't make you into a shomer. Ask the Gemara, but let's continue learning the Mishnah. Eimus seifa, imhechnas brishos balchotzer, that imhechnas brishos, that if you bring something into my field with my rishos, then I become balchotzer chayiv, I become the shomer. That obviously represents the opinion of Rabbanan. Osler Rabbanan, the Amri, bestamen nami kiblo kiblo niturosai. That when you bring something into my field, if I gave you permission to bring it into the field, I become a shomer. So we have a stira. What is the Mishnah teaching us? What is the Mishnah's opinion regarding permission? Does permission represent that you become a shomer, or does permission not represent that? Furthermore, says the Gemara, there's another problem in understanding the Mishnah. Rabbi Omer, b'kulan ein chayiv, ad shikavel abal bayis, lishmar. At the end of the Mishnah, we just learned, the Rebbe expressly says only that when you expressly take on permission to be a shomer, then and only then are you a shomer. Meaning, any other case, you're not a shomer. So we have a very difficult Mishnah. Reisha, the first din of the Mishnah, represents the opinion of Rebbe. The Sefer, the last din of the Mishnah, represents the opinion of Rebbe. Or Mitzios Rabbanon. How do we understand this Mishnah? Rav Zeira. Rav Zeira says, Tavra Misha Shanazu La Shanazu. The way Rashi explains Rav Zeira's answer is as follows. The first, there's a machloikis, what the opinion of the Rabbanan is. Do the Rabbanan agree with Rebbe or not agree with Rebbe? The first wording of the Mishnah has the Rabbanan agreeing with Rebbe that unless somebody accepts upon themselves to be a shomer, they're not going to be a shomer. Then the Mishnah quotes another opinion, what the Rabbanan hold. And that the Rabbanan, according to that opinion, hold that even if you don't expressly accept upon yourself to be a shomer, permission itself represents a shmira. And then the Mishnah says, that's a machloikis, what the Rabbanan hold. Rebbe, there's no shaila. Rebbe clearly holds that unless you accept upon yourself to be a shomer, you're not a shomer. That's Rav Zeira's answer. Rav Amar, kula Rabbanan hi. The entire Mishnah represents the Reish and the Sefer, the beginning of the Mishnah represents the opinion of Rabbanan. He says as follows, a very simple teretz. There's a difference between the owner of the field and a guest in the field. If an owner of the field allows somebody to put something in his field, say to Rabbanan, what does that mean? That he's prepared to be a shomer. He's prepared to be a shomer. If a guest is given permission, it means you're allowed to put it. But that doesn't mean you're a shomer. And it's very logical that we can't compare the status of a guest to the status of an owner. An owner becomes a shomer. A guest never becomes a shomer unless he expressly accepts upon himself. That's the opinion of the Rabbanan. Rebbe, on the other hand, holds that even an owner doesn't become a shomer unless he expressly accepted it upon himself. Continues the Mishnah. Hechnas peroitzav lechotz balabais. Amarav, if somebody put his peris and the animal, my animal, tripped on your peris, you're responsible. Loishan al shochuk behen. if my animal tripped on your peiros, aval ochlo, if they ate them, potter, and he died from overeating, he's potter. My tama, havelish loytoichel. You didn't ask my animal. You brought the fruit in, but you didn't ask my animal to eat. So if my animal ate, you shouldn't be responsible. So the machlokes rishonim why you're not responsible. Some rishonim say because it's davar she'ein motzi, that you're going to bring so much fruit into the field, and that my animal will eat that all that fruit, and it'll cause him to die, is very lachchich. And we know that throughout halacha, by mitzvah lachchich, we don't have to pay. But most rishonim don't follow that approach. Most rishonim follow the approach that this is a situation of a groma ben nezakin. It's considered a groma ben nezakin. You didn't directly cause my animal to die. You only left the food, and the animal ate the food, and it died, and that's why it's groma ben nezakin. Amar Rav Sheshet, so Rav Sheshet says, Amina, kinayim v'shachav Rav omel hashmatza. Rav must have been sleeping when he said this. And there's a very famous tshuva from the Chavos Yor on this line of the Gemara. Is that the way to talk? If I don't like what you say, I'll say you were sleeping when you said it. Is that the way Talmid Chacham speak, insulting each other? So Chavos Yor says, on the contrary, he wasn't embarrassing him, he was complimenting him. He's saying, Rav, you're so great that if you were at your full capacity, you would have never said something so foolish. It must have been when you were sleeping. When you're sleeping, you say things that don't necessarily make sense. When you're up, you never say something. And the Chavos Yor goes even deeper. He says, if you look at the wording of the Gemara, he says, kinayim v'shochev. What does kinayim v'shochev mean? When you fell asleep. He says, if you look at a person's sleep habits, the first part of the sleep at night is the best sleep. That's when you sleep the most deepest. He says you were in a deep sleep, and that's why you said it. When you were even would have been halfway up, you would have never said it. The V'chaim uses this Gemara to teach us another concept. He says Kinayim V'Shachiv is teaching us how a Talmud Chacham is supposed to live. Talmud Chacham is supposed to live, and he's supposed to learn that until he has no more Kayach, Kinayim, he falls asleep, Kinayim v'shachiv, he just collapses because he uses up every last bit of energy until he collapses. The Tanya, because we learned in the Braisa, if somebody puts poison in front of his friend's animal, why is that the din? Because sam hamovis hu d'loivi d'achla. Animals should have enough intelligence not to eat poison. Avoparis, putting fruit in front of animal, is something that is part of the animal's diet. The vida de achla, bedina adam nami mechayiv. Amri v'amai, why? Havalei shloi teichel. Why can't the mazik, the person who put down the fruit, say the animal should not have eaten it? Amri hu adin afilu, so therefore says the Gemara, hu adin afilu peiros nami pot medina adam. So why did he speak the case of Sama Mavis? He should have said a bigger chiddush, that even if you put down regular food, which you can't say the animal shouldn't have eaten, you're still potter. And therefore I'm not chai b'dina adam, still chai b'dina shemayim. The case of Sama Mavis is not straight poison. It was Sama Mavis befrasta, danaperi. It wasn't that I just put down some poison. I put it down part of the food. And still teaches us, according to the Maskon of the Gemara, the Rav holds, it's considered a situation of groma and you're not chayif. Which opens ourselves up to two interesting halach l'mayis shailas. Here we're talking about putting sam hamovis down in front of an animal, and the animal eats the sam hamovis and dies. And the Gemara says, as far as hilchas hezek is concerned, it's chay b'dini adam, pot b'dini adam, the chay b'dini shemayim because of a groma. The question that comes up, one question that I saw the Masham and other places can discuss, is what is the halacha? Are you allowed to put down poison because you have a pest control problem? Are you allowed to put down poison? It's going to cause the animals, tzar bal chayim, it's going to cause the animals to die. Are you allowed to do it or not? So certainly where it's a situation of sakana, where it could get into the food, where it could cause disease, it's certainly mutter. But let's say that's not the concern. It's just not comfortable. But it won't cause any health issue. What is the din? Some places can say it's mutter. They actually use our Gemara as a raya. The Masham says it's certainly usr. It's under the category of tzar bal chayim, and it's usr. Then, the Shvus Yaakov discusses the shayla. Are you allowed, in a case where you're allowed to put out these traps or whatever, this exterminating things, are you allowed to do it on Shabbos? Because we know Netilas Neshama is Osir in Shabbos, and you putting out this poison, you're causing these creatures to die. Are you allowed to put it down? So he wants to say, just like our Gemara is saying, that it's only considered a grumma as far as Hilchas Hezek is concerned, it should also only be considered a grumma as far as Hilchas Shabbos are concerned, and it should be mutter, because grumma in Shabbos is mutter. But then he says in a very important rule, we can't learn Hilchas Shabbos from Hilchas Hezek. They are very different rules. And what's considered a grumma for Hilchas Nezakin, Al Gemara, is not necessarily considered a grumma for Hilchas Shabbos, and therefore he says it shouldn't be done, unless again it's a situation of Sakonis Nefashis. Meisvei asked the Gemara, it says in a Braisa, Hisha Shenichnas Alitrachit Netzel Balabais. If a woman walks into someone's house to grind wheat, Shloi Bershus, without any permission, V'achlam Bahem Tisha Balabais, and the animals of the Balabais eat up this grain, Potter. Imhusku, but if they get hurt, the animals overeat the grain and they get sick, Chayevis, she is responsible. Ask the Gemara the same question. Vamai, name a Havalei Shloi Teichel. Following the lead of the previous Gemara, why is she responsible? She should say, she should have never eaten the animal. Amri, Umir Difa Masnisen. Is the Braisa any different than the wording of the Mishnah? And how did we explain that the Mishnah? That when the Mishnah says that the person who brought the fruit in is responsible, we explain that the Mishnah doesn't mean that he's responsible if the animal overate and died, but what the Mishnah meant that if the animal tripped. The Kimna, we explained that the Mishnah is referring to a situation, Shochluk Behen. So too will the Braisa will be referring to a case, not that the animal ate the fruit, but the animal slipped on the fruit. Ask the Gemara, the Karli, my Karli. The answer is obvious. What's the Gemara's Havimina? Amalai, see, Amalach, he responds. Bishlam Masnitzkani, the wording of the Mishnah lends itself to this interpretation. Im husk behen. The Mishnah says the word behen. And what does behen mean? Shoch behenu. Avahochi, tani husku. It only says the word husku in the Braisa. V'loit tani behen. So I would think that the Braisa means achilu duktani. It means eating. And the Braisa is teaching us that if you bring food into my house without permission and my animal eats it and dies, you will be chayif for the overeating. And he answers, Ravi answers, Loishna. That's not the way to understand the Braisa. The Braisa means that my animal tripped on it, not that my animal overate. Ask the Rishonim. So what is the Braisa teaching us that we don't know in the Mishnah? So the Rishonim may say a beautiful teretz. You could argue, yes, maybe you didn't get permission to bring your chitin in here. This woman didn't have permission. But I'm going to benefit because she's going to pay me for using my mill, for using my grinding machine. And therefore, even though she didn't get permission, it should be considered as if she did get permission. Teaches us the Mishnah, if you didn't get permission, you can't say you got permission. Toshma. Hichne shar l'chatz bal bayis. If you brought your axe into my chatz shlei brishos, v'ochel chitin, and you ate chitin v'hitris v'meis, potter. V'm hichnes brishos bal chatzar, but if you brought it in with permission, chayiv, then I'm chayiv. The question is, v'amai, havelei shlei teichel, answers Rava, what's the kasha? Am brishos shlei brishos karamis? Brishos, if you brought it into my field, says Rava, we're following the opinion of the Rabbanon. That means that when you bring something into my field, and I gave you permission to bring it into my field, what that means is, Shmira Shari Kibalov, I take responsibility. And therefore, if something happens to your animal, I am responsible. Even if Chanukah Satsmai didn't die because it ate my fruit. Let's say while your animal was in my field, it choked itself. But I accepted Shmira. And a Shimer, even a Shimer Chinim, is Chayif Pshia. And that's why I'm responsible. Before we end the shir, we're learning now the opinion of the Rabbanan, that the Rabbanan hold that if you bring something into my field, into my home, and I gave you permission, we have a machlokes Rabbanan and Rebbe. According to Rebbe, I don't become a shomer unless I expressly agree to be a shomer. According to Rabbanan, I become a shomer automatically by giving rishus. So what's the halacha that the pesukim discuss? You come to my house, I invite you to my home. You walk into my home, and you sit down on a chair, and my chair has a nail sticking out of it, and you tear your suit. According to the Rabbanan, I would have to pay for your suit. Because inviting you into my house is certainly a situation of rishus. And according to Rabbanan, I become a shimer. And having a chair in my house with a nail sticking out is certainly a pshia. And according to the opinion of Rabbanan, I would have to pay you for your suit.